Surviving and sustaining in an operational environment requires a logistical trail that will be ready and able to deliver the supplies and personnel needed to execute the mission. In short, it requires a fleet of capable haulers that can get the job done in any climate and place. There is no better example of that than the medium and heavy haulers the Marine Corps has been using for the last 20 plus years to get Marines and their gear to the front lines, the medium tactical vehicle replacement, and the logistics vehicle system replacement. The Marine Corps Medium and Heavy Tactical Vehicles Program's mission is to manage the acquisition and lifecycle sustainment of medium and heavy tactical vehicle systems such as the MTVR, the LVSR, the Mine Resistant Ambush Protected Fleet, and the P-19R firefighting truck. The MTVR and the LVSR are the workhorses of the tactical vehicle fleet. The Marine Corps is evolving this vehicle fleet for greater survivability and lethality to ensure that when Marines call, the fleet is ready to roll. Today, I'm happy to have Lori Owens on the podcast to update us on everything happening in her program. Lori is the program manager for medium and heavy tactical vehicles in our Logistics Combat Element Systems portfolio. Welcome to the podcast, Lori.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, happy to have you here. So we've worked together for a little while, but today is actually the first day we've met in person.
Yes.
What with COVID and all. And so before we get started, can you tell us a bit about yourself and where you're from and how you ended up here at Systems Command?
I'd be happy to. So I'm actually from Virginia. I've lived within probably a 40-mile radius my entire life. So SysCom, when I graduated college, I went to a job fair, you know, looking for a job just like every college graduate.
As many do, right?
Yes. Yeah. So, and at the job fair, I met with a couple of government contractors, and the company, I ended up being hired by L3 Communications back in the day. That's what they were. And so I became a support contractor supporting Marine Corps Systems Command. That was back in 2005. So I actually started December of 2005 working with SysCom as a support contractor.
And then how did you make the transition? How did that happen?
So actually during insourcing a few years later, I was insourced into the government. I was working in the Assault Amphibious Vehicle Program office. That's where I spent about a majority of my career so far. But when I was doing such an exceptional job, they decided to insource me and I became government in 2009.
Was that when the AAV was up in Woodbridge up the way, or was that when they had moved down here already?
We were not at Woodbridge yet. We were still at Systems Command. We moved up to Woodbridge a couple years later.
Okay. Yeah, so I have my timeline backwards. Yeah. All right, so you cover medium and heavy tactical vehicles. Can you give us a brief overview of the vehicles in your program?
Yes, I would love to. I love all the big heavy trucks. So probably the first one is the MTVR that you talked about. MTVR is the medium lift capability for the Marine Corps. We have six variants of that truck. We have two variants of a cargo vehicle. We have a dump truck, a tractor, a wrecker, and we also have a resupply vehicle. That vehicle she's a beefy medium truck. She can do off-road at 7 tons and on-road at 15 tons. Older steps of that would be the LVSR. The LVSR is the heavy distribution system for the Marine Corps. It's very similar to the PLS that the Army has. So the LVSR can do 15 tons off-road and 22 and a half tons on-road.
So when I think LVSR, it's kind of like a semi sort of...
Yes. LVSR also has three variants. There's a cargo variant of that, and there's also a wrecker and a tractor, which is basically your heavy hauler is your tractor variant. Within the portfolio, I also have the P-19R, which is the Marine Corps firefighting truck, you know, aircraft, rescue, crash rescue, things like that. That is the youngest of all of my fleet. We fielded the P-19R. We began fielding that back in 2018.
Okay.
And then lastly, I also have the MRAP in my portfolio. However, we are actively divesting of MRAP. The Marine Corps has decided to zero that out, so we're working on getting rid of MRAPs in the Marine Corps.
Okay, so you don't need to go into all the detail, but just in general, how do those vehicles support the vision of Force Design 2030?
Force Design 2030, no matter what conflict we're in, moving people and things is always going to be important. Moving gear, moving equipment, and that's what MTVR and LVSR do for you. But I would say when it comes to Force Design 2030, MTVR plays a very pivotal role, and it's an integral part of like the HIMARS and the Nemesis system. So within my portfolio and MTVRs, I have the resupply vehicle and the resupply trailer. That is the resupply system for HIMARS and for Nemesis, which is a very important part of Force Design.
And HIMARS we hear about in the news a lot these days. Mm-hmm. So questions. So we've passed HIMARS over to Ukrainians. Have we also given them some of the resupply systems, or do they do that on their own?
So we've passed over some HIMARS, but when it comes to Ukraine, the Army has picked up a lot of the resupply vehicle portion of that.
Okay, so. Okay. So again, working well with the Army.
Yes.
All right. Related to the MTVR, in 2019, leadership decided to extend the service life on the MTVR out to 2042, is it?
Yes.
So how does that life cycle extension, how's that going, and you know, what do you need to do to get that done?
So officially, it was extended in 2019. They provided the letter that extended it to 2042. That was quite substantial. That was a 20-year extension to that platform. We were actually supposed to be phasing MTVR out now. The first MTVR was fielded back in 2001.
Okay.
So it's a 20-year-old platform, extending it 2042. Now it's a 40-year-old platform. So as you would expect, with a vehicle that's 20 years old, we're running into the very typical issues, obsolescence, corrosion. We've had a substantial increase in supplier shortages and things like that, 154% increase to be exact. And that number is only going to trend upward as we continue to move forward in that 20-year extension.
Now, are you doing a lot of modernization on the system in order to take it out to 2042, or is it just keeping the same brake pads and the same whatever else it needs?
So the focus has not been on modernizing the MTVR. We've actually received a top level requirements letter to go after the replacement for MTVR, which would be the medium tactical truck. That is where the focus is going to be moving forward. So we're going to try to sustain MTVR the best we can while going after the next truck.
Okay. So you talked about divestment a little bit related to MRAP, and obviously at some point we'll divest of other things. Mm-hmm. So how do we go about divesting, and is there a way that I can get my hands on some of these, you know, vehicles as we get rid of them?
Yes, we are actively divesting also MTVR and LVSR. Right now we've divested probably about 1,300 MTVRs since inception, about a couple years ago. We have been very successful with the equipment exchange program. So we work very closely with Iron Planet, and that's how we've been divesting of our MTVRs.
So explain that a little so that the listeners can understand how that works.
Yes. So when we have divested trucks, and if they are candidates for divestment, because not everything can be a candidate for divestment when it comes to demilitarization and armor and things like that, it can be very complicated. But MTVR was a prime candidate for divestment. So we reached out to our equipment exchange partner, which is Iron Planet, and we worked what's called an equipment exchange agreement with them, which basically details everything from what percentage the government's going to receive in credits. This is not money. We don't get cash for this, but we get credits. What percentage is going to Iron Planet, what's going to cover their upfront costs. And then I sign that agreement and Iron Planet signs that agreement, and we send them the vehicles, which in turn they will get ready for sale. Sometimes they have to remove armor and demil things. Sometimes, as I like to call it, they like to do pimp my ride, so they actually make it look really cool before they sell it.
So those are the ones I want to find.
Yes.
That's what I want to own.
Yes, that's all a business decision for Iron Planet on what they want to do. But then they will auction them off, and then we will get a percentage of the sale of every truck.
As credits, which
yes.
You then can do what?
Yes, as credits. So those credits add up, and then I can use those credits to buy parts, components, things like that to support my current fleet, which is what I have been doing over the past couple years. When you have vehicles in sustainment like mine, funding is usually lower. You know, they focus on modernization, on new platforms and things like that. So vehicles in sustainments tend to take sacrifices in funding. So I was able to use exchange credits to buy critical ECPs for my trucks, things like, you know, fire suppression systems, survivability type upgrades. So it's been very useful for me.
That's good. It's saving the taxpayer a little money, getting them some, recouping some money on vehicles as we get rid of them. So,
So
you mentioned we're working on a replacement for the MTVR.
Yes.
Talk to us about what's coming and what's the process for getting there.
So right now we received a top level requirements document from our CD&I partners back in May of this year. And we are kicking that program off. We have partnered with the Office of Naval Research for basically a conceptual design phase for this new truck. The top level requirements we have are very broad, and they're very broad for a reason, because we really want to know what industry is capable of doing. There are some high points we want to hit with the truck and things like that, exportable power, better fuel efficiency, even going as far as hybrid or electric technology if possible. But we really want industry to shape that for us. So we're working with ONR right now in a conceptual phase, and they will do that. They'll help us refine those requirements. And then we intend to go out on our own after that and do some competitive prototyping. We really want industry to build us some vehicles so we can see what they're capable of doing.
So that feeds actually right into my next question. Fuel and how do we power them? And you already said you're looking at possible electric and hybrid technologies. Are we looking at that across the entire fleet? Or is it just in that truck? Or are we looking at elsewhere? And I don't know, any other answers you got for us on that rail?
Yes, fuel efficiency is definitely a hot topic right now. On the current MTVR, we have done a fuel efficiency modification. It was simply a software modification, which helped us gain better fuel efficiency in the current vehicle. And we're about 50% through that modification on the trucks. For LVSR, we are looking at an anti-idle technology. We're working with the Defense Innovation Unit. We're working with DIU, and we're partnering with them to potentially put anti-idle technology on the LVSR fleet. We're hoping in the spring of next year, we're going to have a prototype to be able to see and take through testing to see how effective this anti-idle technology is for LVSR. Because with platforms like MTVR and LVSR, they spend a majority of their time at idle. Mm-hmm. So anti-idle technology, in theory, should provide significant fuel economy savings. But we're going to need to test that out next year.
So what will that do? Will it shut it down and then turn it back on when you need it again? Or does it just run more efficiently while it's at idle? What's that technology?
So this technology is not like in your car where you press a little button and it turns off on its own.
Okay.
So it is a manual. So when they go to idle, they will have to manually turn the anti-idle technology on. But it's just a step in the process. So when they're stopping or anything like that, they can hit the anti-idle button or they cannot and leave the truck running. But we didn't want to have the option where it automatically shuts off because you don't know what can happen in any situation. So you want to have the ability to manually.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking in terms of my wife's car. Come to the light and you press the brake, it'll stop until it needs the AC back
yes.
on.
So. I'm still that person that turns it off, though. That's still
okay.
me.
So you mentioned ONR being involved in some of this. What about the Army? Are they solving the same challenges? And if so, I assume we're working with the Army?
So the Army is also looking at fuel efficiency modifications and things like that. I will tell you for LVSR, the Army sits in all of our meetings. They're very interested in what we're doing with anti-idle technology because there is a lot of similarities between the LVSR and their palletized load system, their PLS. It's essentially almost the same truck as the LVSR, so they're very interested in what we're doing in anti-idle technology. They're also very interested in what's going to come from the medium tactical truck. They're involved in everything that we're doing. We're providing all the information, and we will continue to do that moving forward, and they may try to adopt something like that in the future on their medium vehicle, which is the FMTV, and I'm sorry, I don't know what that acronym stands for.
Well, the V is vehicle, but I don't know the rest of it.
Yes.
Okay. So I worked with some Army folks a number of years ago, and they readily admitted that our vehicles were much more powerful than theirs. I won't give you any names and quote any Army civilians, but they were definitely impressed with our trucking fleet. So, all right, so speaking about the newest one, you said earlier the P-19R, the fire truck, is the newest one. So where are we with fielding those, and what's going on with the fire truck?
So the P-19R is fully fielded. We have met FOC, so it's been fully fielded now for a couple of years.
Okay.
Like I said, it is the youngest truck, so we're having some growing pains, but we're working through them. But it's been a very efficient and effective fire truck.
So do you get feedback? Because obviously that fire truck works on the airfields and whatever. So what did we do? Did we work a lot with NAVAIR? Do we get feedback from NAVAIR?
We don't work so much with NAVAIR. And the P-19R, one of the differences, the P-19R is the replacement because the Marine Corps is not so great at naming. Everything is just replacement. MTVR
right.
is replacement. LVSR is replacement. Was the replacement for the P-19 Alpha. And I will tell you, one of the biggest changes between the Alpha and the R is the Alpha was C-130 transportable. The R is not.
Okay.
And I will tell you, that's one of the challenges moving forward with force design and things like that is lighter, smaller, faster, more mobile. That's one of the things we're going to have to look to in the future.
Okay. Similarity of components. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why that would be a good thing. Mm-hmm. I understand we have quite a bit of similarity between our components because most of our trucks all share a manufacturer. So How much similar do we have, and what does it do for our logistics train and our maintainers?
So for the Marine Corps side, there's a lot of similarity between all of my platforms. If you start transitioning to similarities between the Army and the Marine Corps, there's not so many similarities in the medium fleet as there is in the heavy fleet. Like I said, the LVSR and the PLS are very similar, but when you start talking their medium truck and our medium truck, they're vastly different. But within my portfolio, it does help that there is a lot of shared components across all of the platforms, even the P-19, because you're right, they are all made by the same manufacturer. But that also means when you have obsolescence or challenges like that, it's going to affect multiple platforms across the board.
Now, I know that you're medium and heavy, but how much similarity is there with components on the light vehicles as well? Because same manufacturer still, right?
Yes, same manufacturer. But I would say the percentage of similar components between my fleet and the light fleet is small.
Just due to the size of
yes.
the vehicles?
Yeah. Yes.
Things are larger.
Yes.
Yours. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Good deal. So vehicle safety is always a hot topic. And as the safety guy, I would be remiss and if I didn't even ask the question, what are we doing to ensure Marines are safe in your vehicles?
On the heavy fleet, medium and heavy fleet, I can talk to that. In both the MTVR and the LVSR and the P-19, we have anti-lock brake systems already in those vehicles. They were fielded with that. One of the other things that we've looked at is, you know, electronic stability control. And we've actually submitted RFIs out to industry to really see what industry has to offer. But I will say, you know, with the medium fleet and the heavy fleet, training is important. And driving these vehicles as they should be driven is important. I mean, they're very large vehicles, so driving too fast and things like that can have some dire consequences.
It's not just driving a Chevy
yes.
up and down I-95, so.
Yes, that's right. So, but all in all, these vehicles, they're very safe vehicles, and we're doing everything that we can to ensure that they remain safe.
All right, so earlier you mentioned the MRAPs, and you said we're divesting a little bit, but can you give us a little background on the MRAP fleet?
So for me, MRAP might be hard because when I came into the portfolio, it was a couple years ago and we were already getting ready to divest.
Okay.
But obviously, everybody is familiar with MRAP. I mean, MRAP was fielded very quickly and efficiently to serve a purpose. And that purpose was, you know, saving Marines' lives, survivability and things like that. And it did its job and it did it well. But now moving forward, like I said, we're looking at lighter, smaller, faster, more mobile fleet. The MRAP is a beast. But that was the purpose the MRAP was built for, and it did it well.
Right. Even the smallest of the MRAPs are
yes.
pretty large, pretty beefy.
Yes, they are.
I know that in some cases the Navy also uses some of our heavy trucks. And so when they do that, is your team involved in that? Does the Navy have a heavy trucks team, or do we do double duty for both services?
So the Navy is involved. They have MTVRs, and they will continue to follow suit with what the Marine Corps does. So they pretty much just kind of assume the Marine Corps requirement. However, we do work with the Navy in special cases where they want to tow certain things utilizing the MTVR. We will help them to understand if it fits within requirements, if it's safe, and we will help them with that. But they tend to just buy the same Marine Corps truck and utilize that. And I do believe they intend to follow suit in the future with whatever we do with MTT.
So you are effectively PM, medium and heavy for the Navy as well. They're just buying whatever we buy.
At least on the medium side, yes.
Okay, on the medium side.
Yes.
Okay, all right. So trucking in general is a huge part of the global economy. And industry is constantly evolving everything. I mean, they're great about that. How much interface do you have with industry and keeping up with their trends and their latest technologies and being able to insert that into our vehicle fleets?
Yes, so keeping up with industry is difficult, and it's a challenge when you work with the DoD. Industry just moves so fast.
Right.
But with the medium tactical truck, we tried to cast a very wide net because we really wanted those industry partners that don't usually do work with the federal government to harness their ideas and to see what they're doing. And we have seen a lot of interest in the medium truck from the non-traditional, you know, defense contractors, which is fantastic. So I think we're trying to harness as much as industry is doing, but keeping pace is going to be a challenge moving forward. But we're trying to harness where they're at now and see where they're going in the future. Obviously, electric vehicles is where a lot of commercial industry is going, you know, in the next 10 to 15 years.
Well, and commercial industry lives in an environment where they can create an infrastructure
yes.
across the continental United States the places we're going to want to use vehicles that may not exist.
Yes, and that is always going to be an issue for us because tactical vehicles, and especially Marine Corps vehicles, are in some pretty treacherous environments. And saltwater's definitely probably the most treacherous for things like that with electric vehicles. So that's why hybrid electric technology is probably the wave of the future for tactical vehicles.
You talked a bit about the MTT, and we've talked about some hybrid vehicles and whatever. Is there anything else? What's coming for medium and heavy tactical vehicles? What do you see out on the horizon?
Honestly, right now, it's just the replacement vehicle for MTVR. Okay. That's where the focus has been, and it falls within the ground combat tactical vehicle strategy moving forward. The heavy fleet is probably going to be looked at much later once we kind of tackle what the next medium truck is going to be.
Okay. All right, Lori. So we've talked a whole bunch about Army trucks, a little bit, you know, Marine Corps trucks, how there's differences and some similarities, but really, what is the difference in the mission between the trucks that our two services need to do?
So the difference in the mission between the Army and the Marine Corps is the Army's profile is the exact opposite of the Marine Corps. So for example, the Army's mission profile is 60% on-road, 40% off-road. The Marine Corps is the inverse of that. A majority of our profile is off-road. So when it comes to Army's trucks, they're not really built for Marine Corps profiles, mission profiles, and they don't have to be because that's not their mission. So it becomes very difficult to take an Army vehicle and turn it into a Marine Corps vehicle to be able to support that off-road profile. And also, the harsh environment that Marine Corps vehicles go in, the Army doesn't have those same requirements.
Salt water, salt air, right.
Yes, things like that. The corrosion requirement for the Army is far less than it is for the Marine Corps. So utilizing an Army truck and turning it into a Marine Corps truck is very challenging. Now, there are instances where the Marine Corps has been together with the Army from the ground up. JLTV is an example of that. That is a joint program office. But you will find that it becomes a tug of war between the Army's requirements and the Marine Corps' requirements because there is such a vastly different mission profile. And it ends up being, you know, the Army gets probably more than they need and the Marine Corps may not get as much as they need because there's a compromise when you're working in a joint program office between the two services. So for the medium side, you know, right now we went after the medium tactical truck because it can meet all of the Marine Corps' requirements and it can meet all of the mission profile. Taking the Army's medium truck would not be cost effective because of all the modifications we would have to make to that vehicle in order to meet even our basic Marine Corps requirements moving forward.
Is it a transportability problem? Like their trucks won't even fit on the amphibs or things like that? Or
no, it's not a transportability problem. In fact, the Army's trucks are actually slightly smaller than MTVR is, for example, on the medium side. Some of their medium trucks are smaller, but it just becomes that off-road capability, the suspension and things like that. The Army doesn't have to build their trucks to sustain that because they don't spend a majority of their time in that off-road environment.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying that for me.
Yes.
What kind of advice do you have for some 20-year-old who's working out, I don't know, in industry or maybe just recently joined the federal government? How can they get involved in acquisitions and maybe in specific on vehicles?
So I would think, as everybody says, building that network, reaching out to people who work in those fields, if you have the ability to do that and get into acquisitions with vehicles. I mean, obviously, between myself and the light side, we manage all of the motor T assets for the Marine Corps. But there's also the ground side, things like ACV and an ARV of the future. And so you can get involved in that type of vehicle as well. But you have to build that network. You have to reach out to somebody who works in those program office, find a mentor. I mean, if you're an engineer, you can find an engineer that works those platforms, logistics, PM is the same, and build that rapport and get some experience from them. And then when those positions open, you need to go after them and apply.
I mean, that's great advice for anybody in most fields, not
yes.
just in this field. So
yes.
Good advice. So, all right. So enough talk and acquisition. We've got some, the thing we call the lightning round, where we've got some more difficult questions, I think.
Oh, great. I can't wait.
You ready? All right. Let's do the lightning round questions. So when you were a child, what did you want to be when you grew up?
So when I was little, I actually wanted to be a lawyer.
A lawyer?
Yes, I did. I wanted to be a lawyer and was really good at arguing. So when I went to college, I went to I went to Longwood and my major was in business.
Okay.
So it was my junior year when I had a business law class and I spoke to my business law professor at length because that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a corporate defense attorney. And after speaking with my business law professor, she said, you know, it's great work. It's very challenging. Do you want to have a life? Because you will work 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. Great money, but that work-life balance is not there.
So it's funny you say that. So let me jump a question. I'll do the questions out of order from the way I do it. What kind of tips do you have for anyone relative to maintaining a work-life balance?
So work-life balance is definitely a challenge, especially for someone who's wants to work really hard, wants to do a really good job. They feel like they have to work all the time. And what I try to tell everybody who works for me or with me is you have to disconnect. Shut the phone off. Teleworking probably further exacerbated this problem because everything's so accessible. It's right there in front of you. So turn the computer off, you know, put the cat card away. That's the best advice I can give for work-life balance is you just have to disconnect.
All right. So if you could have dinner with any historical figure, who would it be?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. I mean, I've given this some thought, but it's probably a very interesting answer I'm going to provide. But I would have to say Mother Teresa.
Okay.
And here's why. Mother Teresa is probably the epitome of putting people first. Everything that she did for, you know, the disadvantaged, the poor, children, it was always people first. And she did everything that she could to ensure that those people had a better chance at life. And when you're in leadership positions, people are what matter. The work matters, but it's the people that are doing the work for you that matter most. So I think I would like to meet with her and talk with her about her selflessness and how she was just able to give so much of herself.
Yeah, very much a servant
yes.
Of her faith and
yes.
and helping the people of India out and just yes. Just a phenomenal lady. So
yes,
I don't know. That's an excellent choice. I wish I'd thought of that one. So thank you. All right. So what is a TV show, book, movie, or podcast that you would recommend to the listeners?
So honestly, my favorite book and what I tell people all the time is don't sweat the small stuff.
Okay.
You know, I found so much. People get so wrapped around the little things that you can't control. You just have to move forward. Things happen. You have to appreciate it, learn from it, and grow from it, but don't dwell on it. So it's a very simple book, but I think it's very powerful.
Well, Lori, thanks for coming in today. Thanks for talking acquisition, trucks, and answering the lightning round questions.
I had a fantastic time. Thanks for having me.
Well, this concludes another episode of Equipping the Corps. I hope you've enjoyed our conversation today. If so, please take a couple minutes to leave us a review, subscribe, and tell your friends about us. Until next time, stay safe. This is Trip Elliott, signing off.